this is Lena Live. I'm Lena Mirmont with another quite exceptional program. We're going immediately to shift to the world of the most incredibly expressive, unique in his own rights, singer, producer, the mostly important musician and a thinker. His name is Gordon Bokhari. My best introduction is to his music immediately, since he is just a fantastic songwriter. We're going to hear The Mediterranean Woman, who happened to be the overture of his new album, Unbreakable.
Along came this pretty girl who shook and rocked my world, and for just a moment time stood still. Her beauty could just devastate you and fully satiate you. She could turn your life around.
Well, that is quite a fantastic beginning of our program with my extraordinarily gifted guest, and I don't even need to go further than that. And in fact, the best way to end my introduction and to invite Gordon Bokhari to our conversation is to welcome him. And my greatest thanks that you've been able to join us and to share with us your world. Gordon, you're on. How are you? And your words perhaps can be flying from this song to any other place which will talk about your life, creativity, your thinking, your ideas about times, philosophy, and history. That's how great the mind of this person is. Welcome again. And my first question is, where you found this inspiration for this magnificent album?
Well, Lena, first of all, thank you so much for having me, and this is a thrill. I've heard a lot about your show, and very honored to be with you. The inspiration came from many different places. This album was written over the course of a few years, on and off, in a cocoon of a lot of alone time, which I think a lot of artists can relate to. And I think the inspiration is life and all the good and the bad. And I think if I have to say one thing, I would say there's a spiritual inspiration to it. I love music, of course, and also taking negative situations and trying to turn them around into energy, good energy and knowledge and even a drive to accomplish something good. I think that transformation can happen when you're writing a song, and I think that's what the album means to me.
I certainly will try to do my best to collaborate with your accomplishments, and I'm sure I will forget few because there are so many. And I do honor your formal success, for example, one of which has to do with being on the top of artists with in R&B genre, and you certainly succeeded and conquered tremendous creative heights there. Your collaborations with a number of legends, not only by the name, but by their true accomplishments and positions in the music world internationally. All of this, frankly, I will leave up to you because I like to channel your associations with a meaning for your own life, your own experiences, because it's a one thing to be a legend. It's another thing to feel it and to reach it with a meaning and a true expression. I will start just with one acquaintance which you had, and it grew into the collaboration, and it connected your, I understand, childhood, your persistence, your tremendous eager to succeed, which you did, having succeeded with getting in touch with Steve Wonder. Maybe we can talk a little bit about this and have a little bit of a chronology from your childhood and then gradual developing into mature artist.
Sure. Well, Stevie Wonder to me is one of the greatest songwriters ever, and I grew up on the Beatles and other artists, Aretha Franklin and a lot of the Motown artists, and I would be glued to the radio, the AM radio, as a little kid in the 60s, and dreamed of making music. And so I heard Stevie Wonder's music because I didn't have that many albums that I owned, and my sister said, if you promise not to scratch the record, I'll lend it to you. I think I did scratch it, but I played it over and over on my little radio station that I had put together for my friends to listen down the street, and it eventually became a bigger radio station. We were naughty kids, and Stevie Wonder was something we played over and over, and after a while I began to fall in love with this artist, but I didn't know quite how big he was, because I was still just about 14 years old, about to turn 15. So long story short, I fell in love with it, and I began to be inspired by his synthesizer sounds, and eventually got a synthesizer myself and started playing to his music and doing my own music. So he was a big inspiration, and eventually I contacted him, which wasn't easy, but took many months and harassing a lot of people. And I think when I look back, when we're 15 years old, you know, we don't have the embarrassment or shame to stop. So I kept going and had nothing to lose, and it worked to my advantage, but mostly from his generosity and open-heartedness. And he asked me to fly out after he heard some of my music on the phone, in which was an hour-long phone call. And we started working together, and we created some synthesizer sounds during Songs in the Key of Life, his landmark album, and then worked very closely on Secret Life of Plants, which we recorded in California as well as in Bogalusa, Louisiana, where it was about 95 or 100 degrees Fahrenheit and humid and quite an interesting setting. And we experimented with orchestral and popular music sound that we created electronically. I remember one of the ladies who was a housekeeper at one of the hotels said, if you guys don't stop repeating that same segment over and over and over again, I'm going to go crazy, because we would sit on the floor and work on one sound for hours, and Stevie was totally immersed in it, and so was I. So this was an incredible experience at 15, and we ended up working more closely together, and he asked me to produce some things for him, and so it was a terrific collaboration. But aside from the music, his integrity and spiritual influence was as tremendous as musical, if not even greater. And that was very fortunate for me to have a mentor like that. Watching how he dealt with people, we were late for a recording session one time for the Secret Life of Plants album, and we were all in a big camper together, and he had somehow overheard from the other end of the camper that there was a lady having a hard time with her car on the highway, and he pulled over and asked us all to get out and push her car. He was that kind of guy. So that's just a small example of who Stevie is, aside from being the composer and the star. So I was very fortunate to be around somebody that kind and talented.
I will jump just a little bit to place the seed in a near future of our program, stretching your thought about indeed integrity and genuine humanity of this man who plays such a tremendous role in your life and probably in the life of other people. And we will talk about our modern times. In fact, we will be very local, since we are both in New York environment. We will talk about our situation and our reality with the musicians in New York, to be even more precise, in New York City. It will be extraordinarily interesting to see your true picture, your true experience. I have my own, and my associates have their own. And I like very much for us to exchange those thoughts, because among our listeners, there are some younger people and some perhaps people with the dreams to succeed in music, in art, and some other humanitarian professions. And it's not as transparent, it's not as fair as it used to be. So I just was a little bit impatient to touch on this, because I sense from your biography that you extremely magnified in your life experiences. I would say that you have a polyphony of emotions and counterpoint of ideas. That's how I how I visualize your creativity with superbly refined emotions do have a wonderful collaboration with an intellect which does not suppress your emotions but creates this invisible harmony. So we definitely like to have an input of your personal life experiences. However, before that, I like to have a touch of another song. I felt that your experience with Steve Wonder perhaps created an image of a musical father, and it just happened that I liked very much your other song among many in your albums. It's a father and son. So if you would not mind, before we will continue our conversation, let's hear this song, and we will move along with your thoughts and comments about that and some other things. I just wanted to remind our listeners that I have exceptionally beautiful musician, Gordon Bahari, who is a songwriter, producer, who knows digital world, but also knows real world. This is his song, Father and Son.
Father and son, a bond that goes deep, no one could know the treasures they keep. Father and son, the dad learns to play, the son gives him hope while he leads the way. Traveling long ago in a fairy tale sprinkled with innocence, your dream was you'd find your princess and make a home of your own. Father and son, yes, it takes a long time to get there. Love, sacrifice, patience, and care. While you gave me half of your life, and now I can see that a father must work day and night to ensure his child's future's bright and to conquer with all of his might. Deep in my mind, beneath memory, I took those first steps. You smiled behind me. The veins in your hand showed strength like a dam, but your grip was soft on my belly like a lamb. You mastered everything that a teenager wanted to harness, and even down deep in the darkness, we'd get to the heart of it all, to the heart of it all. Father and son, yes, it took a long time to come home, but some journeys must be made alone until we find out who we are. And now I can see that there really is no master plan to transform a boy into man, except for the best that we can. Thank you. don't know when he gave me the key. I opened my hand and the father was me. I marvel each day and wish it could last. I try to hold on, they happen so fast. Now every move I make and every word makes a lasting impression. Sometimes behind her expression I see your smile shining through. That you're gone, your absence, it cuts like a knife. Did I ever say thank you for life? That's the story of father and son.
It is very hard to interfere with words after such extraordinarily beautiful song with such exotic harmonies, shifts, and just a whole world. I would ask you to comment on this. Is there any particular significance and how it will perhaps relate to your personal experiences?
Well, first of all, thank you for your kind words. Wow. I saw an advertisement, I think, either in print or on TV, of a father holding a baby boy up in the air, and his hand was against the baby's exposed tummy. And I saw the strength of this strong hand that could do damage and could be kind all in one against this completely vulnerable baby. And it just hit me, and the song came from that image. I don't remember where I saw it, and it just came flooding to me in one day. And I recorded it when my father was on his way to New York about to see me for dinner, and finished the vocal just moments before he walked into the house and said, "This is for you," and I played it for him. And another thing that inspired me about it was through the different layers and decades that one goes through as a child, we can't possibly fully appreciate our parents while it's happening and while we're growing up. And it was not so much the message, but the inspiration also came from having to be a parent before I fully understood all the things that our parents do, seen and unseen. And so it was a tribute to that.
You put it in a very eloquent way. I can relate to this fully, and I'm sure many more. But what I particularly felt enchanted with, in one sense, it sounds incredibly generous, symphonic, and open. In another sense, it's extremely intimate, extremely sensitive. How would you feel in today's extremely hectic, aggressive world? One can survive, or cautiously, I would say, prosper with sensitivity and integrity with his or her talent.
Wow. Well, I think there were benefits to all this technology. I mean, this is what comes to my mind first, in the speed at which things can travel and it can help people and inform us. And it it's like a public library on your laptop and all that good stuff. But on the other hand, it has its drawbacks, as we all know. And I think it's easier and harder today. It's just different. The artists, at least in music, I can say from this perspective, from the music business, it was very hard to get your music heard. There were just the elite few lucky people and the elite few that were on the radio, at least in New York and the United States, on these playlists, and they would usually be very successful. And now the world is flooded with new music, which is great, but there's so much to choose from and so much to be heard that it comes with a new dilemma. So I can't really reconcile it quite yet and answer you intelligently, except to say that there's pros and cons, I think, in terms of an artist getting heard. And to be sensitive, of course, that's an important part of being an artist, no matter which artistic field you're in, obviously, but it's tough to combine the music business and the art, because they are completely almost irrelevant to one another. And yet there's so many wonderful people out there, the Beatles and Stevie Wonder, who I personally worked with his record company, and many others have, some successfully and some unsuccessfully, tried to offer opportunities to artists solely based on the art, not the commerciality, quote-unquote, and things like that. But it's a very courageous thing to embark upon, because it's hard to fund it and get it heard with the commercial machine out there. So I think you've hit a nerve with a very... I could go on for an hour about this.
And I'm glad I hit the nerve, because nerve is well shared. The problem is, and you said it, even though very diplomatically, but very, very truthfully, I believe that one of the tragic realities is that money buying more than it should buy. And you mentioned Beatles and some other musicians, and that brings a few thoughts which we just touched upon prior our program, that was before, but for the last 10 or 12 years, there was tremendously intensely developed historic events in different parts of the world, and changes just being so dramatic. And one would say, so what it has to do with promoting my music? Well, it has to do with what you said, digital technology, connections are much faster. One push button can produce tremendous success or can destroy at the same time. I think people just forced to be more connected, to be more aware. And yet it is much harder, because people are that much more tense and that much more preoccupied with their own territory. So we're dealing with a really quite obvious dialectic where, for us musicians, I believe it's still much harder. And I am truly concerned about younger generation who just don't have this opportunity. Sometimes they have to pervert their life just to survive. And even with a minimum amount of funds, it looks as if it is not enough. So I thank you that you being that open, because with your experience, even though you are extraordinarily young, needless to say, so handsome, but with all what you already had to offer, it is very important to have your voice of truth. And I wanted to ask you, what brought you to New York? And after that question and your answer, I'm looking very much forward to hear your another song, Unbreakable, which happened to be in the middle of your album. I wanted to say in the middle of your island of your creation, because you did create your own island in the middle of Manhattan. How did you succeed?
That's funny.
Feel frank and tell us how did you manage to do so?
Well, without having that cocoon of alone time, I would not have been able to. When I wrote and recorded this record, mostly at my home studio and somewhat at Dubway Studios in New York, where we did orchestral strings and so on and guitar, it wasn't easy, and I would step out into the world in this dreamy state and be smacked in the face with New York City. It was actually very funny, and if on a bus or a subway or in a cab or walking on the street, if somebody was abrasive, it affects you more because you've been in this cocoon in this dark studio for 16 hours a day. So New York, I can't say helped the music, but sometimes opposing forces help us more than we realize. I have a love-hate relationship with New York. I was born here. My parents were born in Persia and Iran, but they came here separately before they met, fleeing World War II, actually, toward the end of the war in the mid-40s, and they met in New York and subsequently made a family. So I've always been here most of my life in the city, and I love it. New York is incredible, but New York has changed, and sometimes you just want to go somewhere that's a little bit, let's say, friendlier. But New Yorkers are very real at the same time and can be amazing. I do, however, remember going to sell my music once down in Texas, in Amarillo, Texas, where I took a small plane from Dallas. And I saw the president of a big company ask a man who was cleaning the floors, "How is your wife feeling? Is she doing okay?" And he knew his name. And I included those lyrics in one of my other songs. And people on the street, if they didn't say, "Good morning, ma'am," or "Good morning, sir," it was considered offensive. If you do that in New York and say hello to a stranger, they're going to quickly move away from you and think that they're in danger. So it's that gets to me sometimes in New York, but it's still a vibrant, incredible city. But there are times that I think many musicians would feel like going into the woods or to nature to write their music.
Quite a painting, and I certainly personally can relate to this, and it becomes even more complicated because traditionally New York is the circus of melange of many cultures. And it looks as if today it is more, again, in the hands of the dollar. To me, it is mostly cruel because we don't hear true talents. We hear strong bank account, but banks don't know how to sing well. And that is something quite real and quite sad. And you described it just beautifully because it's truthful, but yet you did show respect for the city and vibrant rubato, as I call it, certainly cannot escape anyone. We're going to continue conversation about your other connections with your Mediterranean world. And I like to do so after we will hear you another song, Unbreakable, which perhaps for change you will give us a little preview, because there is a strong significance to this song, not only because the album is called the same, has the same title, but because of the just extraordinarily musical content. So perhaps you can prepare us a little bit for hearing that song.
Well, Unbreakable is, however unrealistic it is for most people, is a utopian relationship between two. But as I recorded the song more and more and tried to add more tracks and make it better and better, I really meant the unbreakable spirit in myself, which certainly was not always unbreakable, but I had to hang in there through difficult odds in many aspects of life, including creative and in the music business. It has taken me a long time to get this album out because of the things you described and other things. So it is about resilience of the human spirit, which really is what I feel the best about, regardless of how well the album will actually do. I feel good about finishing it and being myself. It has a lot to do with that. And there's also a spiritual aspect in the song with regard to a relationship, too, which I think is part of a successful relationship, is to have some kind of spiritual existence together. And that can mean many things, but that's also part of the song.
It is absolutely golden confession, and that's exactly what I felt. So I cannot wait to share this now with the listeners. And after this, we will continue this incredibly multifaceted conversation with my special guest, Gordon Bokhari.
Where
I'm catching my breath because I was a little bit broke. But you are unbreakable. And if I can impose just with a little bit of a comment in classical music, which I wanted to ask you about among many, many other questions, which I'm not sure we can fit in one program. But in the classical music, there is an unspoken proportion between freedom of the melody and the harmony, perhaps some chromatic accidents. There is something needs to keep all of this together, and that's a power of the rhythm. And forgive me if I'm imposing, but I felt with the power of these emotions and syncopations and all these shifts, just most incredibly, unpredictably changing harmony, this power of the rhythm, it's almost like a power of your emotions. Nothing can break you. I don't know how far I am going with this, but please, your comment.
Well, I'm not unbreakable, but so far I'm unbreakable.
Okay.
You know, for me, going in the studio, once I shut that door and dim the lights and start the recorder and start to play, you know, is a place where imagination and reality, of course, merge. And that's a great thing. And I think that I've exercised that, and that's been a great refuge sometimes, and also a place to cultivate dreams, non-musical dreams, all kinds of dreams. And that's what's so great about music. And other artists take us there when we listen. And so it's been a sanctuary. So sometimes I'm not even sure how applicable to real life any of the music is, but I didn't really think about it. I figured, well, it's music, so you can get away with almost anything.
Very, very true. We are embracing the abstract in our life, and music, one of them. I wanted to ask you just a few technical, practical questions. So you do have your own studio, so you are terribly familiar with all this new technique, like a software, the way to write music. You're flying, and you're just like a fish in the water with that.
Yes. I'm using Pro Tools, which is pretty much the standard these days, and it is a virtual recorder, a digital recorder, something that young people today are only familiar with. But back when I worked with Stevie Wonder and others, we used, of course, analog tape that was 2 inches thick, and you couldn't play it 1,000 times without losing quality. You had to quickly get that record done or it would lose quality. It's quite funny now when you look back. So it is digital, but to retain some degree of warmth, to be reminiscent of the 70s and my era of music, I did put all the digital equipment back into equipment modeled after the 1950s and 60s, into tubes and old transformers and things of that nature, which brought the warmth back. So it doesn't sound, to oversimplify, it doesn't sound digital.
It certainly doesn't. I have a little dilemma because, as I mentioned, I have this pleasure or frustration to go further with our conversation. And the pleasure is because I wanted to connect two so opposite worlds to each other, is Mediterranean and Russia, because I discovered that your cultural interest really didn't create much of a limits in stretching with your life experiences. At the same time, I like still to play another song as a finale for our program. And that song will be Mediterranean Woman in instrumental performance. I found it very fascinating, which indeed explains how your magnificent voice, I should not tell you, I'm sure know, or you should know about this, totally in peace and in harmony with the orchestra. I didn't even ask you about your companions, about the musicians you played with. I'm just experiencing that, as I said, frustration. So I hope I will be forgiven, and I will move along with my question, whichever you will like to answer. Question number one is the relationship with the Mediterranean world, which I sense has a lot of personal significance. And the other question is Russian connection with a very famous architect, Ernst Neizvestny, which was a tremendous discovery for myself. I was quite stunned when you kindly shared with me that association. So your choice of what you like to talk about.
Okay, sure. Well, there wasn't anyone in particular who was the Mediterranean woman, but it was about the connection of a similar culture to what one is used to, sometimes being an instant compatibility or chemistry. I was around people from that part of the world, the Middle East, Mediterranean, and otherwise, so also around that kind of music. So it did have a soft spot, and the instrumental sometimes says things that I feel the voice can get in the way of. So I just had to do it as a melody, and it's a beautiful part of the world. And the other thing is, as far as the Russian culture goes, I did have the pleasure through a friend of meeting Ernst Neizvestny, pardon my pronunciation, who was an incredible sculptor and artist, among other things, many years ago, who I met in his Soho studio, and we hit it off. Long story short, he explained how when Khrushchev came to his studio to warn him of his political statements he was making through his art right after World War II was over, he told him, "This is my Kremlin, and as long as you're here, I'm the boss." And, of course, Khrushchev respected him. He did a very dangerous, courageous thing and commissioned him, from what I think I remember, to do his tomb and monument. But he was a big inspiration to me, too, because of his artistic courage. And he took my music, which was made with pieces of metal tuned electronically to symbolize his metal sculptures, and he used it for his movie, his biography, which was released in Russia. I actually never did see it. I would love to see it one day. But he also is a very courageous soul and a great inspiration and great artist.
Quite the connections. You certainly comprehend the, as I would say, tissue of the issue. Yes, Neizvestny was brave enough to create most hilariously, sarcastically funny caricature of Khrushchev. And I'm not going to say exactly what it looks like, but it doesn't look even remotely close to the image of the leader of one of the greatest countries in the world. He had a tremendous respect among intellectuals, and I wanted to congratulate you because this is certainly tremendous recognition for you as an artist, as a visionary, because I know Russians have their own tremendous high standards, and you definitely spoke the same spiritual, emotional, historic, and political language. So again, my sincere congratulations, and you must see it. You must have it now. Russia is, you know, Russia is much more open now, and I guess you can certainly take advantage of the exchange and see if Archive will get this for you. So I just wish you success with that.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
I am aware of your very busy schedule, and unfortunately, I'm aware of real time, which is not always our musical time. But I would ask you last couple of questions, and then we will conclude with another musical image of yours.
Sure.
I know it might be a bit simplification, but just summarizing your self-perception, what would you say you left out in your life deliberately? Or what do you feel life did not yet allow you to have?
Wow. Well, I'm changing all the time, and right when I think I'm going to be the same person in a few months, I say, wow, I think I'll throw out that old coat, throw that out the window. So I can't believe how fast I'm changing and how old ideas are obsolete, but I've learned how to look at them as an important stepping stone to the next stage and let it go. But after a while, you reach a certain age and you realize that there's only so many things you can control, if anything. And so I would say, because I left college after one semester, too frustrated to sit at my desk, tapping rhythms with my pen, had to get out and do my music. I do wish I had had that full experience sometimes. But then a very interesting person told me recently that 4 years of college isn't for everyone, although I think it can be a great thing for most people. So sometimes musicians can feel like a misfit in that sense, and try to fit in the world in other ways other than education. I'm a self-taught musician, so I don't read music. I just write it by ear, but followed my heart.
Well, that is probably the most extraordinary confession. This is my greatest pleasure to wish you the best of happiness for your ear, which is greatest transmitting to your soul, mind, and your health, I hope will be a fantastic accompaniment to your future creations. And I do hope we will meet again on the air, because there are many, as you pointed yourself, musicians today. And decision is up to us who to listen, whom to compare to, whom to come back to. I certainly like to come back to your music. Absolutely sure many more will. And on this note, again, I will wish you the most of to embrace music with every possible angle you can and you deserve. Wanted to thank you for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me, and you're extraordinary and very interesting, and I've really enjoyed this, and I hope we can do it again.
I certainly will not miss the opportunity, and will look forward to future continuation.
Thank you.
I will say that was another very memorable program with my guest, Gordon Bokhari, whose music certainly made already quite a bit of a difference in all of us. And the best conclusion after my wishes to him is to listen to his last piece in his nearly perfect album, which just been released, called Unbreakable. And the last piece of this album, called Mediterranean Woman. I have real difficult time to pronounce this word. But I will not have any problems to listen to this magnificent music. So, Gordon, with you sailing with the flow of this symphony of emotions, and as I said, polyphony of thoughts, we're concluding our program with the Mediterranean Woman by Gordon Bokhari, who is one of the most extraordinary musicians of our times.
Thank you so much.
Absolute pleasure. And with this most eloquent ending, with a slightly expressed question mark, I will wish all of my listeners the best of music, the best of moments with the music, with art, with love, and certainly to succeed with pains and some obstacles, which we all have today, perhaps a little bit more than we wanted to, but certainly able to think and to see through. That was Lena Live with my magnificent guest, Gordon Bahari. And I will see you on the air in another couple of weeks. And on this note, be well with what you like to be well with.